Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the HITECH Annual Report Workgroup. I'm Wendy Naboa with ONC, and I'm pleased to welcome our co-chair, Madel Braves-Melanson, along with our workgroup members, Hannah Galvin, Jim Jurchis, Anna McCollister, and Eliel Oliveira. Unfortunately, Aaron Meary is not able to join us today, but we're hoping Hans Bottendijk will. Public comments are welcome, which can be typed in the Zoom chat or can be made verbally during the public comment period. Now, I'd like to turn it over to Madel for opening remarks.
Thank you so much, Wendy. And thank you to the rest of the work group that's here. And as Wendy mentioned, Aaron is actually unable to make it with us today, but he is definitely here in spirit. And so this is going to be a very packed work group meeting. We have several items to go over, including finalizing some pieces on the crosswalk, as well as thinking about the structure. Oh, and thank you, Hans. And it seems like Hans is on as well. As well as then, if we do have a chance, we're going to get to some of the illustrative cases and topics to sort of highlight the work that we're doing. So why don't we go ahead and jump right on into the meeting agenda. So the first thing we're going to do is go over our meeting schedules as well as our next steps. As mentioned, we're going to discuss a draft of the crosswalk of topics for the HITECH annual report for fiscal year 23. And we're actually going to start right at the security and privacy tab. So our team, our Excel team is going to tee that up for us so we can jump right on in. If we have time after all those items, we're going to get into discussion of the draft illustrative story ideas, which we have now included for about 2 or 3 years now, just to highlight what our vision is for each one of the recommendations that we as the annual report group and HITECH are putting forward. And then, as Wendy mentioned, we will open it up for public comment and then we will convene. Next slide. All right, so let's take a look at the meeting schedules and the next steps. So today is, of course, November 30th, and this is a meeting schedule for the annual report work groups. And so after today, our next meeting will be on December 18th, just to finalize some of the various different aspects of the draft for overall HITECH full committee review. And you can see the rest of the schedule there. And the goal is for us to actually submit our final report in February and March of next year. Next slide. This is a meeting schedule for the full committee. So next month, we're not in December yet. So in January, when we do have our first HITECH meeting of the year, we will go extensively into the review of the draft fiscal year 2023 annual report. And then we will come back to the full committee in February for its final approvals. So then hopefully it's nicely refined, cleaned up to be submitted to Mickey, and then on to rest of Congress. Next slide. All right, and then what are we doing today? So today, as mentioned, we're going to continue to review the crosswalk document, as well as take a look at the stories across each one of the target areas. And the goal of that is to make sure that the stories match up with what some of our ideas and our vision actually is, and that it does appropriately illustrate what we want readers to actually step away with. Then the work group is going to start looking a little bit at the draft report. And so if we get to that today, that would be fantastic. But there have been some recommended changes to help to streamline the report to align even more with the ONC goals for next year. So there's been some really great recommendations that are on the table. And then what we'll do is that we will present the draft report for discussion and approval at the HITECH meetings in early 2024, as mentioned. Next slide. All right, so we are going to jump right on into the discussion of the draft crosswalk. So I hope everyone was able to do their homework and take a look at some of these different items. And so we'll start here just because we still have a fair amount of material to cover. So I prefer for us to start at the privacy and security section first, finish the crosswalk, and then we'll go at the back up to the very top of the crosswalk and just really quickly go through it to make sure that there's no other changes or revisions. And just to orient everyone back to where we are in some of the different notations of this crosswalk, what you'll see is that any of the blue writing is additional recommendations that from our previous discussions that are now included. And then when you get over to the green columns, there's two green columns now. There is the proposed tier in which Hannah's comments are already in there, but we as an overall work group will actually determine the proposed tier, whether that should be immediate, meaning we need to execute this in the upcoming 12 months, or long-term of after 12 to 18 months. But then there is a new column, which is priority for the HITECH 2024 work plan. So as you all recall, during our last HITECH meeting, ONC did present the HITECH 2024 work plan, as well as the key priorities for those areas. And so what our ONC colleagues have now done is added an additional column, and they've already pre-filled it so that each of our recommendations is actually tracking to that HITECH 2024 work plan that was actually also presented by ONC. So before we get started, any questions about what our plan is for today? Okay, all right, not seeing or hearing any, we'll jump right on in. So the very first topic was privacy of sensitive health data, gender and reproductive health. And remember, we have discussed this before, and we sort of went through and revised some of the language. The gap, inconsistent legal landscape governing gender and reproductive health data, combined with the difficulty in segmenting this data, regularly creates barriers to exchange. And the challenge is that current health data privacy laws do not sufficiently protect sensitive health data, particularly gender and reproductive health data, putting it at risk of being compromised. And what we mentioned is that there are opportunities to improve the technical and operational approaches to protecting sensitive health data regarding gender and reproductive health. Our recommendation was to hold a listening session with HHS Office of Civil Rights, and especially because this has very much been on in the domain of the OCR and other groups, in order to explore the health IT industry's opportunities to improve the protection of this very important sensitive health data. And so in terms of the proposed tier, that's where we are here, in which one, are there any other changes or recommendations or revisions to this particular recommendation? Hans, we see your hands up.
Yeah, I have a question around this, and that is with the challenge in context of the gap and the opportunity and the focus of HITECH. Is it really that the focus here is that the health data privacy laws do not sufficiently protect sensitive health data? Or is it more that the challenge is that given the variety of and the landscape of privacy rules, that the technology to enable and support protecting sensitive health data has not advanced sufficiently to do that? And that makes it harder for people to either share too much as a result or too little. But that the technology to enable support for that is not quite there yet. That's really the challenge, that then the opportunity taps into that, looking at the technical and operational approaches to protect that in context of the privacy laws. I'm trying to understand which one is the core challenge here that we're trying to address.
So Hans, I think, at least from my interpretation, it is definitely the latter, and that with the changing landscape, that we have to ensure that our technology is up to par in order to protect the data appropriately based off of so much of the changing political and regulatory landscape, and really ensuring, and that's why I think some of our proposed recommendations of speaking directly and understanding from OCR's standpoint, how they're positioning so that the industry can actually appropriately be agile and we create those safeguards in order to do so. Those are some of my thoughts, but Hannah, I see your hand that's up.
I agree that I think what we're trying to, I do think that the way we worded this is a little confusing, right? That as the legal landscape is changing, how do we enact sort of technical protections over data? That's one piece. But I'm not sure that just the listening session with HHS and OCR will lead us to answers or to solutions on that. I think that there are some pieces around the legal landscape that HHS and OCR can help us explore specifically in that with both the changing legal landscape and advancements in technology, current HIPAA law, and, you know, may need to evolve as part of that if we are going to advance the technology in order to be able to protect the data. And so I think it is sort of a, it is cyclical, right? Like you can't sort of fully advance the technology without addressing sort of current HIPAA law. But I agree that with you, Hans, that I don't think we have fleshed that out here. And I think we need to be really crisp about whether we are asking for advancements in technology, an understanding of how, of whether the law is advancing or both.
Yeah, and in that context, maybe is that the challenge, if that is being phrased, starting with that, given that it's changing and the variety across federal, state laws, that there is a challenge for the technology to enable users, patients, otherwise, to properly manage it so that the data is properly shared or not shared. And in order to advance that, we need to have the conversation, which might then be a dual part. What can be done on the regulatory legal side to create clarity and consistency wherever appropriate? And on the technology side, it is a, what tools do we need to put in place that are not in place yet to help manage it so that we can share the right amount of information and not have a scenario where, because of risk avoidance, people are sharing not enough, or they inadvertently share too much, and that creates the other risk of data having been exposed that shouldn't have. That's the technology balance. I think if we can clarify the introduction of the challenge more along those lines, that will be helpful to then set up the opportunity better.
Yeah. So completely hear and agree with all of you, with both of you with that. And so I think just rewording, and I know that our ONC team has captured some of that sentiment. So it's really making sure that the challenge is that our technology is adaptive to the changing legal and regulatory landscape. But then what I would also mention is that when we talk about our proposed recommended high-tech activities, we do have to make sure that it's clearly defined, and also what we can do in the scope of high-tech as well.
Right.
So I always think we should be advocates, but how much can we do? And so I see two hands. And so Anna and then Eliel, and then you all, let's wrap this up because we still have a lot of content, unfortunately, to get through. And so want to make sure that we can get through the crosswalk today. So Anna?
I think Hannah and Hans's points are spot on. I would add though that I want to make sure, I think it would be prudent for us to make sure that we recommend that they begin with sort of like user experience, either research or either like qualitative or quantitative about what consumer slash patients' concerns are before we start developing the technology to implement that. And I realize the technology is complicated, that especially given the variations in state law, given some of the concerns that have been raised around, you know, I can't remember which state, maybe it was Georgia's attorney general, like subpoenaing personal health records, some of those issues that the people who are implementing these EHRs and the EHR developers have significant concerns about how they're gonna do this. And as the data starts to flow and the connection starts to happen, you know, as Tafka comes online, you know, that stuff's going to need to be dealt with. So, but I want to make sure that we're beginning with a real understanding of what are the concerns, what are the needs, and how can we, you know, incorporate both from the user experience slash patients, consumers, but also from the developer's perspective, like how can we develop the technology to meet those specific needs?
So taking a very informed approach from all of those that are directly impacted. Thank you, Anna. Eliel.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief, Mandel, but I think I agree with all saying about the proposed recommendations may not be sufficient. And gender is a very important you know, piece of data in order to do other things like record linkage matching. And one of the things I can share with the team here, like in our pilots, you know, trying to link data for other projects, we have, you know, US CDI and a definition of gender that's reasonably new, but that's not what's capturing EHRs. So then you find that disconnect of what's being captured in real settings and what's, you know, you having to comply with in terms of data standards. So I think it's, I guess my point here is on the proposed recommendations that besides this legal aspect and sensitivity, there gotta be some broader discussion on how gender gets utilized in so many different ways in electronic exchange, or we're gonna face problems later.
Thank you for that. So then if we look at the proposed recommendation, because this definitely generated a fair amount of discussion from all of us, it's the recommendations we have right now, and does it sounds like this still applies, but it's a and situation. So number one, yes, hold a listening session with OCR and others to explore the opportunities that may assist, but that doesn't get to some of the other items that we had discussed. So succinctly, what additional recommendations will we want to add specifically here? Because we've talked about centering the consumer voice as well as development voice. We talked about interoperability. And then we also talked about really looking at the technology itself, as well as advocating for other HIPAA revisions. So what would you all say for the next proposed recommendations for this? Hans?
Yes, Manel, I think is that actually the some of the next ones that one that we have been talking about and can think about is in the next row.
Okay.
So that in the first row, at least I feel comfortable that the opportunity and proposed recommendation at that level of discussion is a good one to have, where the next row is getting more into detail to the specific around the technology. Mm-hmm. So I'm not seeing a need for additional recommendations. There might be others, but I'm not immediately jumping to things that would be added because I see them already in the next rows.
Okay, great. Hannah?
The only other one I might add is to consider a LEAP grant in order to further work in this area.
Okay. So to consider a LEAP grant there too. Okay, great. Anna?
Oh yeah. Is there a LEAP grant in the second one? I didn't see a LEAP grant in the second one. But yeah.
Don't see that either.
Yeah, but in the first one, you know, either one, I think to as a recommendation for funding to further work in that area. Yeah.
Yeah, this feels like a body of work that needs to be.
Yeah. So it does. It does. So thank you for all those comments, and we will distill that down into the final recommendations with our ONC team. Proposed here, immediate or long-term? I'll just say this right now, what's on the table is immediate. Are there any objections to moving this long-term? Let me rephrase that. Right now it's at immediate. Are there any votes to actually change this from immediate to long-term, or should this stay at immediate?
I would keep it immediate.
Okay. All right, not hearing any changes from immediate, then we'll keep it as immediate, great. So let's go on through to the next one, privacy of sensitive health data. Again, very briefly, there's a lack of consensus on key use cases, the definition of sensitive health data and the path forward to support improved electronic patient consent. The challenge that we have here is the ability to exchange interoperable consent directives across health IT systems, and that is very limited. The opportunity is to implement enabling infrastructure to support the interoperable exchange of consent directives. And so the proposed recommendation suggests steps towards a terminology value set of sensitive health data elements that could be widely adopted and explore what additional foundational infrastructure needs to be in place to support the interoperable exchange of consent information. Any revisions to this topic and the recommendations?
Is there is this a starting from scratch? Or is there something we can point to that's a starting point for this kind of work?
Great question. Any thoughts about that? Anna, did you have some thoughts about that?
I'm just wondering if we need to be a little bit bolder and say perhaps we need to start looking at moving towards some sort of unified consent or consent process where, like, if you're going to be exchanging data and you're certified health IT, then you need to have, like, your patient's consent using this one, you know, standardized consent form or process. Because, you know, consents vary from institution to institution, from vendor to vendor. There are all sorts of clauses and things in there that nobody ever reads. But if there was one single, you know, type of consent that would be used against, you know, for all certified health IT as it exchanges information, that would make it a lot easier for consumers to understand or consumer groups to be able to understand and then share with their constituents.
Well, yeah, I completely agree and support that. I'm also wondering about my point about, has anyone done this, and is there, or is that, is it enough to just suggest this in an ONC? Part of what their drill is to figure out if there's people who've already worked on it in a starting point.
There are lots of models for consent and really good ones that have tested very well with all.
Maybe we suggest that. Mm-hmm. That they, maybe we're more directive to your point, and maybe I misunderstood it. Maybe we're more directive and say, evaluate the current approaches and terminologies around this and take steps towards identifying a standard or something.
I think that's great for you, Jim.
Yeah. Because then that gives something more, they see what we mean. To your point, Anna, there's multiple ways of doing it. And what's that quote? The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many to pick from.
Yeah, but I think that brings up a really important piece of, number one, where are we going as an industry, and especially how to make a streamline, but then what's already out there and what's been successful instead of recreating the wheel. So that sounds like a great additional proposed recommendation to explore what additional models that are out there in order to see if there is potentially could progress with one standard. Hans, I see your hand. That's up.
Yeah, I want to fully support that that suggestion that we want to look at what's already there, what's progressed, and also recognize, and we don't need to literally put that in here, but it has come up in other discussions as recently with the pharmacy task force as well, that one of the barriers is that consent is not expressed in a computable form. It is on paper or on a PDF or something, but it's not in a computable form that the systems can assist in evaluating that. And the infrastructure that is needed to ensure that everybody or the right parties have access to that information, that they actually have it. So I think number two, explore what additional foundational infrastructure needs to be in place, I think is getting to that point. Or at least to me, it spoke to that part of, it's not about only about standards, but it's also about the infrastructure to do that. And this terminology, maybe we can enhance that to indicate is that it's terminology value set, but it's to what we're trying to get to is computable privacy and consent rules. Because then at that point in time, in an HIE context, we have the opportunity to assist, inform, alert, whatever may need to be done. If it's plain text, as well as it might be organized from a structural perspective overall, it's going to be hard for us to then say, well, you can share it or not.
Excellent points. Absolutely. Great. So wonderful discussion on this. And so let's move on. I think our team was able to capture all of that additional recommendation there. And so for the proposed here, this is directly aligned with the HITECH 2024 work plan. So right now the proposed tier is still at immediate. Any objections to keeping it at immediate? All right, so it will stay at immediate. Great. So the next area, lack of accounting of disclosures. So the gap, today's patients have limited transparency into how their identified and de-identified health data are shared. With the growth in exchange and expansion of purposes of use beyond treatment driven by national networks and the TEFCA program, and it's important to balance increased transparency to consumers. I think we all agree, and especially Anna, with the burden to healthcare organizations to provide an accounting of disclosures. So the opportunity to find the metadata that needs to be collected to support the implementation of accounting of disclosures, identify lessons learned from programs in other industries that successfully provide data use transparency, and learn more about patient preferences for those disclosures about the sharing of their data. So our proposed recommendations so far, and we're just reviewing them again, were number one, explore the metadata needed to implement prioritized use cases that allow patients and healthcare organizations to understand who is accessing patient data and for what purpose. Two, explore opportunities to encourage healthcare organizations to regularly provide increased transparency into how they use their de-identified data. And three, explore patient preferences for disclosures about the sharing of health data. All right, so already some hands popping up. So Hans, you were first.
Yeah, my question is around the challenge of the reference to healthcare organizations, where the focus is with the burden on healthcare organizations. Is that too limiting for what we're looking at? Are we covering the variety of organization that captures or receives and uses data about a patient that that we might want to recognize that? Are we really intended to look at any place where quote-unquote PHI is being managed, which may not always be considered a healthcare organization?
I think that's an excellent point, because we know that patient information is actually flowing into many other organizations and entities outside of just healthcare organizations. And this is just as important when they flow into those other areas. So I agree with you. I think that should be broadened. And so maybe we say the burden on, we can say healthcare organizations and other non-healthcare organizations, or just a burden on organizations in general, because that would be all encompassing.
Yeah, maybe organizations that hold patient data or that hold health data.
That sounds great.
A much wider variety than what typically is thought of as a healthcare organization.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Thank you for that. Jim, you were up next.
Yeah, hey. My question comes from personal experience. And let me give you two sentences on what that is. So when I was at Vandy, I was chair of medical records, Vanderbilt. And we had employees that we said could look at their own record, but we promised we would do audits to see if inappropriate people were looking at their record. What we ended up finding is it was incredible. We had to give up because all of the different people that might touch and look at a record, it was not clear who they were. And more often than not, they had a right, but it took an enormous amount of effort to actually find out if they were appropriate or not. And so we ended up having to give up on it because it was creating more harm than good. And so where I'm landing is, how do we add to this a literature? Is there a literature review or some way to figure out what are the useful, you know, how do we balance usefulness to the patient versus creating angst? And I don't know if I'm articulating well, but how do we actually study useful ways of presenting it so that we don't suddenly have patients calling hospitals wondering why Jennifer Smith, who they don't know, accessed their record, right? I think there's risk there that they need to evaluate, in my opinion, just having done this.
You know, that is an excellent point. And it seems like it's twofold. Yes, for the patients to be very clear. I mean, I just dealt with a patient situation in which that patient did not quite understand that health systems can actually, you know, see her the patient's data, and that is completely appropriate if it's in the setting of trying to provide care and other pieces. And so she was very concerned about breach of privacy because she said she didn't allow, you know, one organization to see the health records of another, that of her records in another organization. So there was that lack of patient education there. So similar to what you're saying, but then also just what are the best practices in ensuring that there is appropriate use of that data. So I think those are all good pieces.
And one thing I'd say is what level of detail, because, you know, like, for example, a patient knows if we get down to the level of users within systems, right, that's pretty granular. Then, you know, somebody covered the nurse at lunch, but the patient knows that's not the nurse. Enormous amounts of wasted time for the patient and the clinic, right? So right. I guess what I'm saying is, how do we be thoughtful about running pilots and understanding what level of information and what the possible information toxicity is? Now, this is not to say we shouldn't do it. I just want to protect patients. I want patients to have access and understand, but I also want to make sure that we're not wasting their time too. And we might put in there understanding the usage of information and how to do so in a way that doesn't waste the patient and clinic's time. I don't know how to put that in there, but I strongly think we need to have that as an evaluation so that it's done correctly and we don't find out suddenly that something's put out there that is bad for patients and institutions. Okay.
Something along the lines of explore appropriate awareness campaigns that are patient facing to educate them about the appropriate uses of their and or personnel of their data or something along those lines.
And I would actually recommend piloting first before successful pilots that balance the information toxicity versus value before we actually have something that's required in the broad literature. Excellent. Strongly recommend that. And please, this is not to say I'm for patient, you know, privacy and access, but I've been down this road. And so I strongly suggest we put, you know, pilots to make sure we get the value to toxicity right.
Thank you for that, Jim. Anna, you're up next.
I have a couple of thoughts. One is I completely agree. I think it may have been Hans that referenced, you know, the need that are we just going to limit this to healthcare institutions, or do we want to include anybody who uses the data more broadly? And I guess the way that I wrote this out in the recommendations that we put into the HTI-1 recommendations were two distinct things. One is accountability of disclosures per individual. So, I mean, personally, I'm not sure that names are necessarily needed, but perhaps positions in hospitals or hospital systems. So like individual data disclosure, I think is critical. And I believe that's part of the HIPAA regulations, or, you know, at least part of what, or maybe it's 21st century cures. I don't know. Devin and I went back and forth about this for a while. So there's a specific statute to which that refers, or in which this is referred or referenced. The second thing is I think probably might be more implementable for organizations that don't deal with identified data, but deal with de-identified data. Is to have, you know, require a listing of the ways that de-identified data is used. That to me is lacking, and I think it's critical because people, if we want data to be interoperable, if we want data to be used, then people need to have an understanding of how that data is being used. And I think the vast majority of the uses are things that patients would, broadly speaking, approve of in terms of like research into, you know, cancer or diabetes or whatever, improving public health. There are probably some for which people would not be particularly happy, but it's difficult to know if nobody has any idea how their data is being used and when it's being used. So I see them as two distinct types of disclosures and accountability and transparency. But to Jim's point, I mean, you know, this isn't going to be a simple and straightforward thing, whether you're talking about it from, you know, an information understanding perspective or from a technical perspective. So maybe this is like a separate body of work, again, beginning with, you know, user experience and really understanding both the recipients of these disclosure information, as well as the people who are inputting the data and accessing the data at institutions, and then thinking through how do you create a system or a standard that meets both of those needs.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, great points, very important points, Anna. Thank you so much for that. And Hannah, we have your comments too, so thank you for that. And we're capturing all of your ideas. Eliel?
Yeah, just I'll keep short as well. I agree totally with Jim. I see situations that only that, you know, is addressed when it's a data breach of a celebrity or some inadequate access for like embryo data, and then some scandal, and then we have to dig it up exactly who had access to what and when. So it becomes an investigative process. It's very tough. So, but at the same time, you know, I think we're talking about technology, right? And meaning there are ways to probably build intelligent systems to track things and warn when there is an issue. And I think I want to suggest here, maybe as part of the recommendation, is to look at other parts of the technology, you know, specialties to mirror solutions that could work for healthcare. And what I mean specifically, like in data security, for instance, and network security, the amount of information that goes in and out in every computer at every minute and any second of the day and through firewalls is extensive. But there have been still been tools that have been built to monitor all that, to kind of figure out when there's something that go wrong, right? And there's specific data standards on how that's done. So I think that to me could be an interesting way to leverage other knowledges in computer science that can be utilized here to, like, you don't need to necessarily be digging into all the data, but you need the ability to understand that something is just not right at some point. Mm-hmm. Through the logs that are going through the wire at any point in time. So,
great. Absolutely. Wonderful for that too. So thank you, Eliel, and thank you, everyone. And so let's go on, and we are running out of time. So I'm going to just continue to push us along. And we're really going to focus on if there's any major exclusions that we need to add in, and then most importantly, all the prioritization for the tiers. So lack of accounting of disclosures. Do we think that this is an immediate recommendation that we need to put in place, or is it long term?
Defining long term.
Okay. Yep. So Anna, long term. Any others?
How are we defining it?
How are we defining it?
Longer term? 5 years? Is it next year?
After 18 months. So normally our near term is anywhere from 12 to 18 months implementation, of really making sure we dive into that. And then longer term is anywhere from 18 months and longer.
Okay. Hey, Madel, can you, I'm just not remembering, but I thought in recent, was it HTI1 or I can't remember what it was, but isn't ONC kind of requiring EMRs to do this disclosure? And I'm trying to remember if that was an RFI or if that's already in proposed rules. I'm just not remembering. Do you know?
Jim, I'm not quite 100% quite sure. I know that at least from ONC standpoint, this did not rise to their highest area of priority. This piece, but that does not mean that it's not important. Does anybody recall anything about the priority of the disclosures?
Well, I just remember making these points because they were going down the path of making this a requirement in our responses, and I don't know if the final included it or not. So the reason I say that is because if it is a requirement, then I think we need to giddy up, and this needs to be more immediate. But if it didn't rise to the final rule, mm-hmm. then I think we ought to have an immediate plan and then a long term. Because I think in the immediate, if that's where they're headed, right, in the immediate, they need to do the work of assessing and doing pilots.
Correct.
To make sure we understand how do we do it. And we might say that immediate, within the next 18 months, they ought to evaluate approaches and test them.
I agree. That'd be my, yes. Yeah. Completely agree.
Yeah.
So again, I don't know if we have visibility into, again, from the final rules or from where they're thinking about this. At least from what's been communicated so far, it's not rising to the highest level. But still, this is our report. And so if we, because of some of the other things that are proceeding in other spaces, I agree, we can definitely do this as an immediate approach. And that's just what we listed as right now, until we get a greater clarity. Hans?
Just as a note, I'm looking at the 2015 edition certification. I don't believe that I need to check what HDI-1 proposed. It has not been published yet. Right. But that one does have a certification criteria on accounting of disclosure. So there is some requirement on certified software as expressed in a certification criteria. I don't know if it's voluntary or mandatory, but there is a criterion in there.
Which one is it in?
HDI-1.
So
this is 2015 edition. HDI-1 would have to check whether they have advanced additional requirements on it, because I've not seen that they would have removed it.
Well, Hans, I don't know if there's additional, but I remember this becoming a requirement in HDI-1. I know we don't have the final, but I think it's really important for us to answer that, because I think our strongly stating they need to run pilots and not just suddenly make it a requirement that all this data is made available to patients.
Now.
So
let's make it an immediate, because since we do not have the final rule yet, it's better for us to be more proactive than less proactive. And again, just for the ONC team, for Michelle, really incorporating the language of recommending a pilot of this work prior to the requirements, in order to ensure that it works as designed and does not cause any challenges. So excellent. Great, thanks you all. That's all, we'll move on. And let's keep on going to the next section, which is patient access to information. Great, we have nothing there. And then we have our recurring topics. And once again, the recurring topics are still organized into our priority target areas. As you can see, we did have an extensive conversation on several of these areas. That's why there is the green lettering there. So the first one is in terms of interoperability. And this was the standards to support data linking and patient matching. If you all recall, we decided to sort of combine that all into one category versus how they were previously separated out. And so still going back to the gaps, challenges, and opportunities, the main piece was the lack of the standardized health data linking has resulted in a disparity of interoperability across systems. We also included patient matching when sharing data needs to be improved as well, especially for vulnerable populations. The challenge of national standardized method for linking health data is needed. Patient matching errors can result in inaccurate record creation, inadvertently merged records and duplication of records, and other patient safety challenges. The opportunity to explore possibilities for a national strategy on data linkage, especially across QHINs. And then efforts addressing patient matching should continue while ensuring that solutions meet the needs of vulnerable populations. And then the recommendations that we put were hold a listening session to learn more about A, how to improve the standardization of the data linking that support interoperability increases the quality of the data content and the ability for recipients to request needed data. The TEFCA QHINs experience with exchanging data with each other. So really getting a listening session, understanding what their experiences are and recommendations, including how they are implementing cross QHIN patient matching and supporting vulnerable and diverse populations. And then last but not least, government agencies' experiences with linking clinical and claims data, for instance, CDC, FDA, and other entities. We currently right now had rated this as an immediate, something that we needed to really dive into because of the fact that it is really supports our overall interoperability efforts. And so wanted to open it up, any additional revisions, and what do we think about the priority ranking? So first, any revisions, or does this seem that it's hitting okay?
you know, I think the immediate is right on. If I understand this question correctly, when you say linking, you mean patient identification methodologies? Is that what we mean by linkage? And the reason I say that is, as Tefka, as it's stated here, as Tefka goes live here in 2 weeks, right? The QHINs are named and operational. I know that Commonwealth is a QHIN, and I know from my HEA experience that they had a less than 50% hit rate for proper patient identification, because they were looking at a nation's worth of John Smiths, many of whom had the same birthday. And it was abhorrent, right? And so from my perspective, if what we're talking about is patient identification methodologies, that's critically important and it needs to be soon rather than later, because many of the TEFCA use cases are going to rely on completeness of data. And not matching patients correctly means we have very incomplete data and bad decisions will be made and the value of TEFCA will plummet. And so for all those reasons, if that's what we mean, I would endorse it being a high priority and a near term. Yeah. After all that, am I misunderstanding?
No, I think you're spot on, because that's how I interpreted it too, was data, correct data. And it's interesting that you said that, because now that you brought that to light, because I think all of us were making that assumption, but we do have standards to support linking, data linking and patient matching, but it is the appropriate patient identifiers in order to link all that data together and for interoperability. So there is something that may need to be cleaned up here so that there is no confusion, but no, you're spot on, I feel. Eliel?
Yeah, so Jim, I think you are spot on. And I think the reason that we have four bullets here is because, you know, there are different use cases that require different linkage strategies. Like in the case of QHIMs, like, and we are hoping that someday this is going to be fired and able. If you don't deduplicate and you know whose identity, you're not going to be able to be getting live data, right, from the API ecosystem that we are hoping to have at some point. But on another front is like, you know, and I specifically dotted there the FDA work that we do with Sentinel and the fact that we're using claims data and we can't link back to clinical data because there is no way to do so. You know, there are other use cases in addition to the real-time clinical use. And these programs like the Sentinel is a good example. So that's where the last bullet there is talking about privacy preserving, because there are ways to do that. But nobody has defined how that could be done nationally, where all these big data set where CDC, FDA, and other agencies have could talk, even if identity is not there.
Yeah, and good point, because I think one of the high level use cases in the CDC is linking data while still having it be de-identified data that's linked.
Correct.
And
correct.
So I think that maybe there's a collaboration there. On that. The other question I have is, we've been talking about this for years. And I guess one question do we have in there is, what are the barriers are the barriers still there and real that are going to prevent us from making progress? Right.
Well, Jim, I think your question is exactly why it's in this recurring topics area, because it has continued to occur for years. And this is one of the reasons why even outside of this meeting, we've talked about, well, what are we going to do about these recurring topics that high tech continues to bring up every single year, but we're not actually gaining momentum on. And that's where some of the new structures came out to play in terms of having some of our tiers of how we're going to really try to start moving this needle. But you're right, this is something that high tech has been on high tech's list and top priorities for many, many years, and also for the industry for many years. So thinking about what we can do, what our recommendations can be in order to continue to move this work forward, that's going to be very important as an important piece of our recommendations. Hans, you're up next.
Yeah,
and then Eliel.
Thank you. A couple of thoughts there is that looking at the challenges column, It seems that the challenge, the first bullet might benefit from stating that a consistent national standards method is lacking, because the need then it really indicates what the challenge is. So I would just shift it around a little bit. The thing is that matching varies not only because there are different in demographics that need to be addressed and that have different characteristics that you need to look for to ensure you get a proper match, but that within demographic context that that we are deploying a variety of different matching techniques. And I think that harmonizing so that that you have a common reliability that when you match, you indeed can trust that it is a proper match or not, is critical. So I think it's the harmonization of the different methods that are out there. The barrier that is there, the biggest barrier, is our discussion around national identifiers. And in the absence of that, what can you do? The notion if the trusted exchange framework is able to fulfill its promise, where QHINs are integral of understanding where patients' records are located, that means that particularly in that context, other networks to a greater or lesser extent have attempted to address that. But TEFCA has very particularly called that out as a target. I think having the focus that we have here on TEFCA to help figure out how QHINs in particular can do that would be very helpful to ensure that the knowledge that they gain, the mapping that they can achieve, is shared across QHINs, and that therefore we collectively get a better match from the start. But that still leaves the problem that Jim raised, is that if you have many people at a national level with the same name, same birthday, all not quite the same address, how do I manage that? That's not unique to QHINs. It just amplifies it in that now I get larger populations together. It's still the same fundamentals on what's the data that I truly can use. And once I've created a good match, that's probably a combination of network level as well as local organizationals, because they're actually in touch with the patients. The networks are not. So somehow we need to address not only the automated and computable version of it, but what are the processes, the registration, administration, other things that are best practices that at the front end can help advance this as well. If we only look at the technology, we'll continue to have the challenges that that we may not have high quality data to match against. What can we do? US ad or USA address is a part of that, but what else can be done on the process side to get better data up front? Because hate to say it, it's not a great way, but if we don't have high quality data in, we don't get high quality matching.
That's right. That's 100% it. So thank you. Those are all very important points, Hans, in every single way. And Eliel, you'll be the last one on this topic, and we're going to continue to move forward.
Seems like I'm always the last one, but I'll keep it quick. So I think that to the point that we have had this topic for a while, and I think it's because the challenges with it. One, we had a prohibition before, as you all know, and that was lifted, and now we start evolving certain things. So Hans was talking about the US address or US at project. I'm mentioning here PPIL as an advancement on this front, but another one that folks don't even know about maybe is referential matching. That's basically using other government sources of data to basically increase the accuracy of, you know, and without saying that other industries have cracked this, the code on this as well, right? When you're trying to get insurance and they ask you three questions like, have you ever had a black accord? Have you lived in these addresses and blah, blah, blah. They eventually get to that precision. So I think the point here is like this topic to me is immediate for us to keep bringing this up because we still don't have a solution, but the solution is out there. It's just that we need to get everybody to agree on how to do it.
Yeah. Agreed. And what you said in terms of even all of the other mechanism or the other types of industries that actually do matching quite well, that's where C comes into play. Maybe we need to expand it even beyond government agencies' experience, but as you said, into insurance or other, you know, finances, in which financial institutions do this quite well as well. So great. So sounds like we're keeping it at immediate. Excellent work, team. We're going to keep on going down to the next topic here. All right. And so that was the last piece there, streamlining of health information exchange. This does not have a recommended proposed here. And so this was a little bit more of a revamp from a prior topic, but just to make sure we go through this very quick. And again, you all, we only have a little while. So I really only want to spend about another 10 minutes. So really big revisions. But then most importantly, we have to prioritize this because we have to get to the next portion of really thinking about the report itself. Okay, so all of these items we have been through before. But now if there's any large glaring gaps that we're missing, those are the ones that we should really pay attention to. And then we do have to rank immediate or long-term for each one of these areas. So streamlining of health information exchange, again, gaps in interoperability remain with health organizations rely on multiple methods of electronic data exchange and must coordinate across multiple health systems, health IT systems, and health information networks to enable exchange. The challenge, lack of implementation guidance and varying policies lead to differing implementations and difficulty in exchanging a consistent set of data. For instance, CCDAs include only data from the previous encounter, while others include data from the past 3 years. Our opportunity is to explore the development of implementation guidance that enables increased consistency of the data exchange. Our right now recommendation is to identify priority use cases and develop recommendations on implementation guidance that can be used in the field to increase the consistency of the data shared. And so again, any big revisions or air gaps that we have lost, and then we have to talk about where our priorities. LELC, you are first this time.
Yeah, no gaps. I think I was just going to recommend on the proposed recommendations, right, that maybe this is a good task for the QHIMS and TAFICA to address, because they would have to come up with this definition of the basis for those exchanges. So that's the only thing I would suggest to add on that column.
Excellent. Great. Thank you.
I would agree completely. The thought that was going through my head as well.
Very good. Thank you, Anna. So there's a plus one on that recommendation. Any other pieces or revisions or additions to the recommendations? Wonderful. Well, where do we want to set this? Is this an immediate goal, meaning within the next upcoming 18 months or long-term, greater than 18 months?
I think long-term, lived with doubt it for so long that now it's better to wait for the QHINs and TAFCA to establish, maybe.
How many immediates do we have right now?
I think the vast majority are immediate, Don. So, I mean, historically, we think everything should happen now. But I do think almost everything so far has been immediate, except, yes, because even our long-term, we changed to an immediate.
Yeah, I don't want to go quite totally the route and say, let's see what TAFCA can do with the QHINs and how much they can put a dent in this. But at the same point in time, given the number of immediates and the other ones that we have, this has been a long-standing challenge. We need to continue to pay attention to it. We need to continue to advance. It's not only going to be TAFCA that can solve the problem. They are part of the potential to solve it. So that makes me indicate longer term, but with an eye on, we need to look at the different areas. It's the TAFCA can contribute to it. It are networks, regardless of whether they're part of network. There is the what can I do in the demographic data to have higher quality data in there, which then also goes back to what are the processes that we can help everybody to do better than what we do today. So to me, is that. It's not quite immediate, but longer term would be okay in light of everything else.
Okay. So in context with all of our other immediate priorities, this will be a longer term, especially given that we want to see at least what the QHINs can do, at least right now, but still this is a priority. So let's say that if we don't get enough momentum over the next upcoming year, maybe because this is a recurring topic, maybe it changes to immediate if there has not been enough forward motion by the time we revisit this area for next year. Okay, so long-term, any objections to long-term? Okay. Not seeing any, so we will go ahead and move forward to the next one, cybersecurity events across the healthcare infrastructure. So once again, cybersecurity events continue to block access to health records, which can impede patient care. Cyber attacker skills and resources are definitely outpacing the ability of cybersecurity professionals in healthcare to prevent cyber attacks. Mitigating the patient safety risk and financial costs of cybersecurity events is an opportunity for us. Our proposed recommendation right now is to hold a listening session to explore best practices across healthcare and other industries and amplify existing federal and industry initiatives to improve cybersecurity. So once again, cybersecurity is always going to be a priority for all of us. What we're looking for right now, are there any significant revisions or additions? And then we need to vote on the proposed tier. Hannah.
So my only revision would be that in addition to a listening session to explore best practices, I think a listening session around experiences of those who have had significant cybersecurity events is incredibly helpful. There was a congressional review recently where health systems who had cybersecurity events came and talked and shared their experiences. And operationally, I found that, and my team found that incredibly helpful. And I think that learning, right, this is still emerging and continually emerging. So not just sort of the recommended sort of theoretical academic best practices, but the actual experiential pieces from those who have gone through it. I think those listening sessions would be incredibly helpful.
That's a great suggestion. That's very, very helpful. Thank you, Hannah. All right. I don't see any other hands raised for revision. So proposed here, is this immediate or do we think that this is long-term?
Feels pretty immediate to me. I mean, but to your point, it's all immediate. We want it done now. So,
well, this one, I agree with immediate because we are already far behind the pace of advancement. It's leaving us further behind.
Right. So I hear
the only thought I would have run recommendations is like, I know that there's the high trust framework that's out there and that seems to work or at least have a lot of merit. I mean, maybe evaluate whether or not that's sufficient to be applied across all of the health hospitals and healthcare institutions. Others are far more expert on that than I am. So I'll just throw that out there.
No, good point. Good point. So it sounds like immediate is winning. So we will keep this at immediate. Great. All right. Next topic, patient access to information, limited guidance for safety and security of mobile health applications. Again, topic that we have discussed several times in the annual report group. And so there's the gap of lack of uniform public or private approach to oversee mobile health app field results and inconsistent quality of apps and widely varying privacy and security protections. Our challenge is the use of apps that are built without an authoritative source and without sound clinical judgment and integrity, and that can produce patient safety issues. Our opportunity is for clinically valid apps vetted by third parties. Specialty societies highlight available guidance and develop certification criteria to support interoperability with other certified health IT modules. Our recommendation, explore the guidance available and certification criteria needed for apps that have been vetted as clinically valid to support interoperability with other certified health IT modules. So again, any large revisions, also thinking about the fact that ONC does not have full jurisdiction over mobile health applications, but of course, definitely with that interoperability with certified health IT modules, that does follow more into ONC's domain. But just keeping all of that in context. So any revisions, and then let's discuss if it's immediate or long-term. So any revisions first? Okay.
We include, I in one of the work groups that I've been on, I know that we talked about this. I don't know if it was HTI 1 or if it was the USCDI 1, but I feel like there was a recommendation or recommendations we made around this. Maybe I'm, this is what my dreams are made of these days, but I feel like this is immediate because a lot of the, you know, one of my big issues is patient-generated health data. A lot of that data is stored in structured manners in health apps and health, you know, phone-based applications. So if it can't be taken from the phone into the EHR, then it's never going to make its way actually into EHRs. So it feels to me like a pretty important one.
Yeah. So definitely hear you on terms of immediate right now, Anna. Any other thoughts about immediate or long-term?
I agree, Madel, with Anna and Hannah, is that we talk a lot about patient being involved in their own care, right? And that means mobile apps, in my opinion, along with other things. But it's, you know, completely open there for exploitation and there's no oversight whatsoever. So I think this is an immediate thing that needs to be addressed.
Great. Great. Any reason for any votes for not immediate for longer term? Hans?
This is not a counter for immediate or long term per se, but I think part of it is that when the term incorporation is used, it has different connotation, where some might interpret it as part of and equivalent to, and others might interpret it as accessible and therefore comparable or accessible and reviewable as you need to. And there's a technology challenge there as to how do we do that so that we can meet both those requirements and are we clear on that? There's some promising work going on. So I think in that context, longer term, I think is the better one, given the work that still needs to be done to make that a reality on how to put them side by side together and how they truly relate. Is it really incorporation or is it really accessible as needed? Mm-hmm.
Great. So definitely, Hans, you think that it should be that our priority for this should be a little more long term because of that aspect of the incorporation of this.
Correct. What does that really mean in getting everybody on the same page on what that really entails?
All right. Yes, absolutely. So I will tell you my leaning was for more long term for similar reasons, but it was longer term in terms of we're still, and especially because so many of these mobile apps live within, you know, the FDA, FTC, and just the incorporation. So I felt like we needed to understand a bit more about that sort of integration. It's very similar to what you're saying, Hans, about the incorporation or not. That's why I was leaning more towards long-term, but I think we're the only two that think that. So I think immediate wins. So we're gonna go on with immediate. All right, let's keep on going to the next areas. Sorry, you all, I'm pushing us through, okay? These are the last three. So I'm charging us through the course.
Okay.
So when it comes to patient reporting, electronic health record update processes, gaps, transparency about the accuracy of patient data, and an easy electronic mechanism to update incorrect data are still lacking. There is no simple technical way to support this and ensure that updates are transmitted to downstream providers. The opportunity is to identify best practices to improve existing processes to review and respond to patient requested changes, considering exchange and privacy concerns, and then hold a listening session to identify current processes healthcare providers are using to receive and process patient requested changes and explore best practices to improve current state. Again, any significant major revisions or additions? Okay.
So I put here whether, you know, to evaluate whether or not this is a current priority. This is certainly not something that I I don't know how much other people are hearing about this, about wanting the, you know, patients to be able to make these updates in a with a technical process or a technical standard. But it's something that's not coming to my attention operationally. So I don't know where this recommendation came from, but that was where sort of my comment here came from.
There are definitely a lot of concerns with that, you know, within the patient community about the fact that, you know, people have raised issues related to accuracy in their records a number of times. I know I certainly have. And, you know, I am, you know, with it and health literate enough to be able to like point that out if some of the inaccurate information is exchanged or makes it into, you know, a CCD report or whatever. But, you know, I have to be able to do that every time, and whereas that might be a challenge for others. So it is an issue, whether or not that has to be like an issue that needs to be mitigated from a technical perspective, I don't know, but some sort of a requirement for mitigation, I think, is warranted.
So that's covered under HIPAA, right? That the HIM department, right, has to at least, you know, hear you or make an addendum or things like that. I think my question is whether or not we need a technical standard to do that, or whether that back and forth with the HIM department can happen over a protected email and all of that. That's I think what people are doing today. So I hear you, and I think it's really important to be able to have that process. I hadn't heard that we needed a specific sort of technical process to do that, but maybe others had, and maybe that's come up in needing a way to do that. Yeah.
Right. So I can tell you, because we do have to set these three priorities, and I want us to do mm-hmm. this, at least coming from ONC standpoint, it hasn't been at their highest level of kind of like the areas that they have to absolutely want to dive into. Hannah, I agree with you. I think this is an important piece, but I just haven't heard about it saying like we need to have a solution now. So I would vote for longer term for this. Again, longer term does not mean that it's not important. It's just that we have other really pressing issues that we kind of want to weigh in on first. So I would vote for longer term for this one. Any other thoughts about the priority?
I would agree with that. There's still a bit of work to be done. There is some IG fire implementation guidance that has been drafted. It might already be published on how to do this. So, and there is a need for some technical underpinnings that particularly then go also to how do you write that information? From what source, et cetera. So this, a longer term, I think, is a realistic perspective.
Great. Any other thoughts? I know it sounds like we're moving more towards long term.
I think that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Thank you all. Next one is PGHD, which is very important as well. Lots of writing here, so I won't go through everything, but if the gap, patient-generated health data can be challenging to transfer into EHRs and time-consuming for providers and patients to access, requiring special effort, challenges, standards are needed to simplify incorporating PGHD data from health apps, wearable devices, and other sources. The opportunities that we discuss improve standards and metadata to support the incorporation of clinically relevant PGHD collected from health apps, wearable devices, and other sources. The proposed recommendation explore collaboration with other relevant federal agencies to define clinically relevant PGHD that could be incorporated into provider clinical workflows, explore best practices for where PGHD is stored securely for the metadata that is required to improve usability of this data. Any changes? All right, let's go towards prioritization. Is this an immediate action or long-term?
I think it's immediate.
Thank you, Anna. All right, we have one immediate. I'll say two immediate. I also think it's very immediate. I think it's going to take a lot of work, but I think we need to explore it. Any other thoughts? Hannah, I know you have long-term here.
I do have long-term, and I'll just set a context for that, right? In my particular health system and setting, there is not a big push for patient-generated health data. I think that that is reflective of the patient population that I work with. And so I just want to set that in context, but understand that that's not every patient population.
Thank you for that, Hannah. Hans.
Yeah, I think earlier comments around incorporation, what does that really mean, is one of the challenges that we need to have for alignment. So there is the interest. The question is, how is that data being used? Is it just viewing possible? Some of that is already feasible in certain contexts, or do I really need to have it integrated with, and it becomes, so if you will, on the other side, part of the same trend line, which then goes to the quality of the data, how do you use it, what, how you can compare it, et cetera. And where that balance sits is not very well agreed to. That's why this area remains a bit of a challenge as to how far and what does it mean that incorporation. So that makes it a little more challenging. Is it really immediately addressable? But it is an increasing area of interest to figure out how patient-generated data can be part of, I'll use that term for a moment, of the data that a clinician has access to as needed and as appropriate to work through. How that is best resolved, it, does that truly mean incorporation into the EHR? Or does it mean accessible by the clinician from the appropriate trusted source?
Right. And Hans, I think, and so just to see if you think this is still immediate versus long-term, I think that's where that second bullet came into play of really like, what does, I think it's getting to your point of how, where is this data and how is it truly incorporated or is it just linked out to? I think that's what that second bullet was trying to explore that.
Correct. And I would agree with that. It's just, to me, the balance seems to be a little bit more on the longer term side than the immediate side, but I would not have a concern with starting. Exploration is already underway. It's I'm trying to balance the how many immediates do we have?
A little bit of, I know, because everything's a fire we have to put out now. All right, Eliel, unfortunately and fortunately, you are the tiebreaker because there's two and two. So is this immediate or long-term for you?
Yeah, I feel that like the last comments here about bringing this data inside of EHR does not make sense, will never make sense. We are continuing to growing more and more data sources, more sensors, but there gotta be some way to create that connection in the workflow so that more and more of this data become available when needed. I feel that's immediate because there's already so much here and it's gonna continue to grow. And we still don't have a clear way to integrate things, you know, alongside the EHR, I'd say. I don't like that idea of like just within the EHR because there are so many complexities with doing so with the thousands of EHRs that are out there. But there are ways to actually do, and we have piloted some of that, where things work alongside and you get knowledge of what's going on out there. So we need a solution for that. I feel that's quite critical.
Okay. So then was that a immediate or long-term then?
Immediate.
Okay, immediate. Okay, so we flipped over to the immediate for that one. All right. Thanks, Eliel, for being the tiebreaker. Last one, you all, and then we still have to go through very quickly. I just want you all to see the stories, and then we're going to go to public comment after that. Last one, user-friendly price cost data transparency. Pricing coverage data provided for transparency can be difficult to understand. Many different challenges with implementation of and compliance with it. The opportunity to expand price transparency efforts and further understand patients' experiences. And then the recommendation is invite CMS to provide an update to HITECH on healthcare provider and health plan price transparency initiatives. Is this a immediate or long-term? Hannah has voted for long-term.
I'll set some context around that too. Not every, like we have a lot of immediate things.
Yep.
We want to hear more about what CMS's plans are around that. And that's why I selected long-term. Though I know that many patients need to understand this sooner rather than later, and it's very important.
I think it's a critical need. I'm just not completely sure it's the ONC's priority.
Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. So two for long-term, three for long-term. Any other objections to long-term? Good. We have another long term. Excellent. Thank you all so much for prioritizing and adding some of the different revisions. We have a couple minutes before public comment. And so I would ask the Excel team if you can just bring up the various different stories. We do not have time yet to go into too much of the draft report. We'll do that at another time. But I did want to make sure that we as a work group go through the stories just visually, because when we get together our next time, we really do need to revise them. Hopefully we can do some work before our next meeting to get some of your thoughts and comments. So these are the draft illustrative story ideas for the HITECH annual report. For those of you all that are new to HITECH and to the annual report, if we go to the next slide, one of the things that we like to do is that these ideas represent sort of initial options for a set of illustrative stories of the recommended HITECH activities that will occur in the future. So in the final report, there will be a single story that will be highlighted as a paragraph above each one of our five primary target areas, so that someone who is not as familiar with this content will be able to read the story and say, oh gosh, that makes sense why HITECH is making these recommendations and the vision of what HITECH has. Next slide. So this is just, and we don't have time to go too deeply into it, but I just wanted you all to see this. So for instance, for the use of technologies that promote and advance health equity, there are two stories here, one based off of a patient who currently lives in a food desert, and also there's very bringing in the incorporation of social drivers of health, as well as other community organizations. That's one story. Another story is regarding a senior patient that has low vision needs and how that patient actually navigates in terms of receiving their healthcare. So again, two stories for us to both look at in order to then revise. Next slide. The next one, use of technologies that support public health. Once again, this is actually a story that has been written about in a sudden surge in cases of gastrointestinal illness. So please take a look at this, make sure that it makes sense or any revisions that you may have. Next slide. And then in terms of interoperability, there are two options there. One with a patient with a hyphenated last name, and really going back to the idea of that matching and the cardiology practices querying TEFCA in order to learn about the patient's previous diagnoses. We also have information from a skilled nursing facility. And again, looking at the interoperability from the skilled nursing facility and their EHR and other entities. Next slide. Hans, I see your hand. I'm just going to go through these very quickly and then I'll answer your question. Next slide. Privacy and security. Again, two different stories for us to take a look at. And our job is to revise them, but then also see which story best reflects what our recommendations are trying to contribute to. And then the last set of stories is patient access to information, and what you have here, the two, one focus on endocrinology, other on neurology. So please take a look at those. Hans, your question.
A clarifying question, and that is, are these stories meant to be forward-looking, reflecting on the potential?
Okay. Yes, absolutely. They are the future. So they are supposed to represent from our current recommendations right now. We are trying to get to this forward-facing future state of our systems and healthcare. So that's an excellent question.
It helps in reviewing them. Thank you. Yes,
thank you. All right. So we are exactly at 4:25 Eastern time, 1:25 my time. So we're going to, I'll turn it back on over to Wendy for public comment.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to open the meeting now for public comment. If you're on Zoom and you'd like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. And if you're on the phone, please press star 9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So I'm going to take a look here. And at this time, there are no public comments. So I'll yield the time back to the work group. Medel, please proceed.
Thank you, Wendy. And so now what our next step is, again, I want to just thank everyone for reviewing the crosswalk. That by far is the largest amount of work that we have to do. And we have now prioritized all of our current themes as well as our recurrent themes. What I would ask is our next meeting is scheduled for December 18th. If everyone can actually go through those illustrative stories and really either select the ones, especially in those target areas that have two stories, select the story that you think is most representative of our vision, but then also make any small revisions to those stories, that will be quite helpful, because during our next work group meeting, we will definitely take a look at the stories as well as preview one of the initial drafts of the report. And that's what we'll do in December in preparation for January, to report out to the full committee of HITECH. And then of course, with hopefully the approval of the report in February, then for a review and approval by Mickey, and then on up to being submitted to Congress. So I just want to thank you all for all of your time, and especially over this full year. This has been a fantastic time serving on this work group with each and every single one of you on. I'm happy to see all of our collective work finally coming together into one final report. So thank you for that. Any questions from the work group?
What's the best way to incorporate edits into the stories?
Wonderful question. So what I would recommend is do track changes just on, because it is a Microsoft Word document. So if you do your track changes and then just send it back to us, and most importantly to Michelle, so that she can see your edits and incorporate them, that, or they're able to at least track who's making edits to each one of them. Great question.
And where are the stories? I thought they were in slides.
Yes, so they were sent out to the work group, and we will resend them to as well. But they were sent out in our packet. And in fact, even on this calendar invite, the stories are also there. They're attached to the calendar invite for your review as well.
Okay.
So we'll make sure to send it back out, and especially with any additional instructions for you too. Great. Any other questions? Well, if there's no other questions, again, thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day and your evening, and we will see each other in a few weeks.
Thanks, everybody. Great.
Thanks, everyone. Okay.